Hey everybody, Julie G Podcast. It's April 2012. Hope everybody's doing well. I'm a little bit under the weather, so I'm going to apologize right up front about my congestion and my voice. But I'm really excited about this particular podcast. This one's about a little show called Top Shot on the History Channel and its companion show on H2, Top Guns. I'm going to chat about how to become a sponsored shooter, and this episode is going to be all about media. And I'm going to finish up with some of your questions answered, so let's go ahead and get started with the show. Head on over to Benelli USA to check out the Benelli Performance Shot M239. High performance, hardworking. Team Benelli 3-Gun. It's been a long few months as I've been waiting and waiting and waiting to be able to share some exciting news about being the first female expert on the History Channel's Top Shot. Now, if you're a shooter, you probably know all about this show. It's a reality-based television show where contestants get to vie for a very significant prize and to be named America's Next Top Shot. It's really, really exciting. The challenges that these contestants get to participate in are incredible, using firearms from modern-day firearms to primitive weapons. And they, of course, have to live in a house together and deal with all of those challenges. So it's a pretty popular television show among shooters and even people who don't know much about shooting. So it's pretty exciting. I've been on a number of shows in outdoor networks, the Outdoor Channel, Pursuit, Sportsman Channel, NBC Sports, and mostly for competition-based or pro-tip kind of things. And I have a bit of experience with television, but I'll tell you, it's a whole other different world when you get to step on the set of a History Channel show like Top Shot. Just the sheer number of people and cameras is, wow, it's overwhelming and impressive. And it was definitely an experience. I'm a huge fan of Top Shot. I've been a fan of the show since it came on a couple years ago. In fact, I own all the seasons. You might be surprised to hear that I actually don't have cable TV. But thanks to Netflix, Apple TV, and Hulu, I pretty much get my TV fix whenever I can. And Top Shot is definitely on my must-see TV list. As a shooter, I love the show, and I have a confession. I am a reality TV show junkie. So this is the best of both worlds for me. I love it. But I've wanted to be on this show since I watched the very first episode. And for me, I have a young one at home, a husband with a demanding job, and of course I have obligations to my sponsors. So it just hasn't been possible for me to even consider being a contestant on the show, at least in this point in my career. But when I got the call from the History Channel and the Top Shot people to come on as an expert, oh yeah, I'm like, where do I sign? I'm definitely in for that, definitely. One of the things that you learn immediately when you get to work with Top Shot, whether it's as a contestant or as an expert, is that Top Shot is like Fight Club. Nobody talks about Top Shot. You can't say anything. And that's so hard to do, especially when you want to share with people or they're asking, oh, why aren't you on Top Shot? When are you going to audition for Top Shot? Kind of thing. And there's such a time lag between when filming occurs and when the actual show airs. And because my role as an elimination challenge expert is pretty minor in the scheme of things, and not knowing the entire layout of when I came in, at what point in the show that I entered in to do this challenge, and how long it was going to last, it's all really a mystery. So I've been, over the past few weeks, I've been like, is this the one? Is this the one? Is this the one? I've been looking and watching all the little trailers, like, did they show the sliver of an M&P? Did they? So I've been pretty excited about it. And it's been nail-biting experience, to say the least, but it indeed did air. The episode that I was on was called Crossbow Crossfire, and it started out with contestants battling out in this really dynamic course of fire with spinning targets with a modern-day crossbow. As with every show, two contestants have to go to the elimination round, and that's where my role came in. I taught them how to engage targets that are moving with the M&P Pro Series 40. The thing that you don't really get to go into on the show, because, you know, it's the end of the show and there's a lot of excitement and drama and it's supposed to be the actual competition, is that I had the opportunity to work with each of the two of them separately for 30 minutes. And in that time frame, we basically worked on a familiarization with the M&P Pro Series 40 and the task at hand, which was how to engage moving targets. And there are two types of thought behind that, and it's really based on the speed of the target. A target that is moving quickly, like a swinging or bobbing target that you might encounter in a USPSA or IPSC, IDPA competition, you're probably better off ambushing that target. That is, having your sights up on to where that target's going to appear in your sight picture. And as soon as it appears and you have a good idea that you're going to have a solid hit on it, that's when you take the shot. The other concept is when targets are moving a little bit more slowly, that allows you to track them. Now, you may or may not have to incorporate a lead into that, as you would for, let's say, the NRIB Yankee Cup, where you have specific lead points at each yard line distance that you're going to shoot that target from, especially if you're shooting an iron-sighted gun like we were in the challenge. Then you can track the target. You can actually follow it along and shoot and get good hits on it. So that was the premise behind the instruction part of the challenge. And basically, 30 minutes, that's it. 30 minutes to become familiar with a gun, learn everything you can about how to shoot the targets, and then you are basically shooting for the chance to stay on the show, the chance to win the big prize. And I think that's the one thing a lot of people don't realize. It's very easy for us to armchair quarterback as, you know, we're watching from our couches in our living room or wherever we're watching the show, is that there's so much on the line here. They don't really have a lot of opportunity to really work and train and shoot these different firearm platforms. So when you add in the element of a potentially a gun that you may never have shot before, add to it that you're going to be shooting moving targets, and hello, you have no idea how they're going to be moving or what's going to be happening or how things are going to be scored. There's a whole level of anxiety involved. You add to that that you're battling to stay in a competition where you could win a significant amount of money and an amount of prestige and reputation as you as a shooter, it's significant. It's definitely something that I realized the moment that I stepped up there and stepped on set and started working with these two, was that I had a role. I had to give them everything I could to give them the best opportunity to perform to the best of their ability in that challenge. 30 minutes is not a lot of time, not a lot of time at all. And there's a limited number of rounds. It's really something that I felt a lot of pressure as an instructor to say, all right, I need this. My job here is to make sure that I give them the very best I can, each of them, so that they have a fair and equal opportunity to really shine. Immediately after the opportunity to work on Top Shot, I moved over to a different part of the set and got to work with the director of H2's Top Guns. H2 is the History Channel's second channel, and it's basically H2 more to history, and Top Guns is the companion show to Top Shot, where the guns and gear featured on Top Shot are basically put through the paces, and it has a little bit of an interactive element where people can take a poll online and vote for their favorite or their top gun in each episode of Top Guns. And so I was brought in to bring out three Smith & Wesson firearms, the Smith & Wesson M&P Pro Series 40 with Warren Tactical Sights, the Smith & Wesson 9mm 1911, and the Smith & Wesson Model 625 Jerry Michalik Edition. And it was pretty fun. I wasn't sure what to expect because how are you going to compare three very different pistols? You've got a revolver, you've got the M&P, and then you've got a 1911. And so it was going to be an interesting show. But when I found out that I was going to have the opportunity to work with two excellent action shooters, Brad Engman and Maggie Reese, I knew it was going to be a really great show and a fun opportunity for us all. Basically, we shot up a bunch of bullets and a crazy bunch of targets. But what was a lot of fun about this show is we had the opportunity to showcase everybody's skill set pretty well. Brad Engman is a fantastic USPSA production shooter, and so we were able to set up a little challenge where he really shined with the M&P Pro 40. The same for Maggie. I have a huge amount of respect for Maggie Reese as both a competitor on Top Shot and, of course, a fellow teammate at the IPSA World Shoot in Rhodes, Greece last year as a member of Team USA. Huge amount of respect for her as a shooter and as a person. She's absolutely a joy to shoot with and hang out with on the range, and so it was a lot of fun shooting with her. And man, boy, she really rocked it with that 9mm 1911. And then, of course, having the opportunity to work with Colby, I think that one thing that you don't get to see on Top Shot is how great a shot Colby actually is. He never gets to shoot. He just talks all the time. I'll tell you what, when he picked up that revolver, it takes a lot to impress me, and I was definitely, definitely impressed. So we had a lot of fun, and I was brought onto the show as more of an expert showing the ropes, but I got to do a little bit of shooting at the end, so it was a lot of fun. And I think that we really showed people how great a time it can be to go to the range and shoot up targets and challenge each other and have a safe, fun time. I think we exuded the joy and the fun that we felt on the range. And that's the one thing I wish that people would take from that episode the most. And of course, you know, maybe go buy a few Smith & Wessons. Of course. For more information about the Smith & Wesson firearms featured on Top Shot and Top Guns, visit smith-wesson.com. If you'd like to watch Top Shot and Top Guns, go to historychannel.com to view it online for free, or you can download episodes Crossbow Crossfire and Pistol Power on iTunes and Amazon.com in both standard definition and HD. Continuing on with how to become a sponsored shooter, this show is going to be all about media. And what do I mean by media? I mean photos and videos. In the first podcast of this series, we talked about the importance of statistics and knowing your titles and your stats in order to be able to provide them in an easy to copy format, whether it's an Excel, Word document, or using a source like rangelog.com to record your statistics and be able to provide that information to potential sponsors. In this show, we're going to be talking about the importance of having photos and video. And we're going to start out with photos first. You want to think of gathering together a group of photos into a portfolio, if you will, something that you can easily show to sponsors. And you're going to want to collect some very specific photos for this, about 8 to 10 photos. And one of the first photos that you want to have in this portfolio is a head and shoulder shot. And this head and shoulder shot is the kind of photo that would look like if you were taking your wife or husband out to dinner. This is what you would look like in a casual setting or how you normally dress outside off the range. And you want to avoid wearing eye and ear protection, hat, all that. This is a very casual photo. And the benefit of having a photo like this is if you happen to have connected with this sponsor contact on the range, they may have no idea what you look like off the range. Shooters look a lot different in different settings. So keep that in mind. And having a shot like this is going to be helpful for your sponsor to see what you look like off the range. It's also a tool that can be used in media, newspapers often use this type of headshot, so it's a good thing to have in your portfolio. The next three photos to add to your portfolio are posed photos. One is a full-length photo, and two are from the waist up. And these are pretty easy to set up and do on your own if you have a digital camera with a timer. When picking your location for your photo shoot, pick a really neutral, natural background. You don't want to have a lot of garbage in the background or any extra stuff that could be distracting from the main purpose of your photo, which, of course, is you. You also want to pay attention to what you're going to wear for this photo shoot. Neutral khaki pants, always a winner. Avoid wearing black or white because sometimes those don't photo or film well. A nice, colorful shirt is often a very good way to go. Good colors are green, blue, red, even brown. You also want to avoid logos. If you're not currently sponsored, the last thing you want to do is potentially upset a sponsor who is considering you by wearing clothing that may be in direct conflict with that sponsor's product. So if you keep it neutral, keep it plain, keep it simple, and avoid the logos in your posed shots, these are something that you can use for a long time, especially if you're going to be sending out sponsorship requests to various different companies. You want to make sure you're wearing proper eye and ear protection. Eye protection, try to go with clear glasses, so again, the potential sponsor can see your face and your eyes. And if you choose to wear a hat in this photo shoot, that's okay. Keep in mind what I mentioned about logos, but also you're going to want to have to pay special attention to your lighting. You want to make sure that you're not going to have any shadow on your face when you're actually taking these photos. You may need to play with the flash and different angles and that sort of thing in order to capture the best photo with the light. Now let's get down to the nitty-gritty of what these photos should look like. Your full-length photo is you as you're getting ready to walk up to the line and shoot. So you want to have all of your gear on you, all of your equipment with you. You also want to look friendly, warm, inviting, happy. Avoid the intense, growly, awful-looking face. You want to be marketable. So just a full-length, simple photo of you getting ready to shoot. After that, you want to have two waist-up photos, and these are pretty easy to create. Imagine that your camera is the target, and you're aiming directly at it. Now, move your muzzle about 2 feet to the right and start aiming at the same level as the camera is. And that's going to allow the camera to take a timer shot of you and what you would look like from that angle facing you. You also want to keep in mind that you may want to lower your gun a little bit so that you can see as much of your face as possible. Do the same thing, except instead of aiming to the right, you're going to be aiming to the left. Now you have four photos for your portfolio, your head and shoulders, your full length, and your waist up from different angles. The rest of the images in your portfolio should be of you in action. Chances are you probably have some photos from you competing in matches, and you can certainly go through and select any of those. Or you may want to set up a specific photo shoot type session, bring your wife or husband to the range, give them a camera, and say, hey, will you take photos of me while I'm shooting this? It's often a good idea to do this at a local event instead of a major competition so that you can focus on helping that photographer figure out the best angle to take photos of you on the stage. And you don't have the distraction of having to have to worry about performing at a high level. You can designate that match as an opportunity to get some great action photos. Now, while we're talking about photos, this is something that's very important. If you have a photo that you want to use that was taken by someone else, it is very important that you get their permission to be able to use it. Even professional photographers in the shooting sports often let shooters use their photos for personal use. And personal use can be, you know, anything from sharing it with a sponsor for a potential sponsorship opportunity or on their website. A lot of professional photographers see this as a great way to showcase their work as well, as long as you give a photo credit. But the second you share that photo to a sponsor and they decide that they want to use it for an advertisement, that's when you really need to make sure that you follow some very strict rules. That photo is not yours. It's actually the photographer's. You may be the person featured in the photo, but the image isn't your work. So it is your responsibility to make sure that you connect that potential sponsor with the photographer to make sure that they have the proper approvals to use any sort of photograph in any sort of advertisement. Just keep that in mind. It's a professional courtesy to be able to extend photo credits to people who take photos of you. And if you're going to share them anyway, you need to make sure that you have the proper permission to do so. Now, let's talk about video. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, video is worth 10,000. And video can be a very, very useful tool for shooters when they're approaching sponsors. Now, chances are, if you're very serious about getting sponsored, you probably already are taking video of you shooting matches for an analytical aspect of trying to understand where you can improve as a shooter. But it's also a great way to market yourself as a shooter, especially with free tools like YouTube and Vimeo.com to share these videos. The nice thing about sites like YouTube is that you can upload a video and you can actually edit it through YouTube and supply things like titles and annotations and that sort of thing, which is a very, very handy tool for you as a shooter. If you don't happen to have video software, this is a great alternative. Video software that often comes in most laptops and desktops include Windows Movie Maker or iMovie. If you have an iPod, you can download the iMovie app, etc., that sort of thing. So these are tools that you can use to create good video. And the secret to a good video is length and the fact that you give out information. Things that you want to include in your video are the name of the match, the date, and the type of shooting sport so that your sponsor knows what's going on. If you just pop into a video where you're blazing away at targets, they're not going to know anything about what you're doing. So you want to include the sport, the information about the match, the date, and your name as part of this video. Then you can go ahead and transition into the actual shooting part. And with action shooting courses specifically, they're really handy and useful to take video because chances are they're usually less than 30 seconds, which is really an optimal amount of time when you look at statistics for web video. It can also correlate to sponsorship opportunities. A potential sponsor is not going to have time to watch a 15-minute video of you shooting every single match from last year. It's just not going to happen. Now, if they're interested, they may be going to your YouTube channel or they may contact you to say, hey, can I come watch you in a match? That's great. But by keeping things limited to 30 seconds or less, you allow them to see what you do in less than a minute. It allows them to click on another video, 3 to 4 videos in the same format. They're going to get a good idea of what you look like when you're actually competing, and that is important. So we have a list of our titles, a basic rundown of our statistics that we can provide to sponsors, a portfolio of photos from a headshot to posed shots to action photos, and finally 3 to 4 30 seconds or less videos that kind of show exactly what you look like in your element on the range. And you can tie all of this together with a great cover letter or an email and put it all together in either a zip file or a disk as a way that you can send it out and share it with a potential sponsor to see if they're interested. Now that you've got all this great material, it's time to also share it with the world. And that's also going to increase your exposure value. So in the next podcast, we're going to talk about different opportunities of sharing yourself on the internet to gain exposure and promote yourself as a brand to a potential sponsor. Special thanks to Ace of Ammunition and World Tactical Sights.
Answered.
Okay, I actually have quite a few of your questions answered for this segment. One of the questions I received was if I actually make any special preparations for flying into ungun-friendly places like the state of Massachusetts, and that's a great question. I generally try to avoid anti-gun airports. Pretty much every single airport in the state of New York is, especially New York City airports, Boston, Chicago, some of the others. If I can avoid flying into an airport that I have heard that bad things have happened to law-abiding citizens traveling with firearms legally, then I try to avoid it altogether. It works out pretty well for the Smith & Wesson IDPA indoor nationals, even traveling into Massachusetts, because I flew into Hartford, which was actually the closest airport. So if I know that I need to travel into a state that's particularly anti-gun, sometimes I will fly into a neighboring airport, like in the case of Hartford, with the Massachusetts match. The other thing I like to focus on when I'm checking in is that I'm friendly and professional. Even if I find somebody that has a disdain for firearms or shooting or whatever, I find that if I act friendly and professional, then they really, it makes the whole process a lot smoother. I actually wrote a blog post for the Daily Caller and Women's Outdoor News on flying with firearms, and I think that's something that's very important. When you do travel with firearms to states that do have very strict laws about it, it's very important that you research that and follow the rules. You don't want to get caught up in doing something wrong. Chances are, if you follow the specific rules of the state that you're in, you're going to be okay. And so that's a little bit of extra research on your end to make sure that you follow the rules of the state and the laws. It certainly makes things a lot easier. The next question is, how many rounds do you typically shoot during a normal practice session, and how long is a normal practice session for you? That all depends. In the heat of the season, I'm shooting nearly every day between 300 to 600 rounds a day and between 2 and 4 hours. Sometimes I like to break up those sessions. If I'm going to shoot a 4-hour session, I'll shoot 2 hours in the morning and then 2 hours in the afternoon. I think it's important that when you do have a long session that you take good breaks and that you're able to focus on the skills that you need to. It's very easy in a long day to start developing bad habits. So you want to make sure you're keeping your mind clear, that you eat enough, that you drink enough, and that you take enough breaks during the whole process. Some days are shorter than others. Some are longer than others. It depends on what I'm needing to work on. It also depends on the day if I'm doing really well. If I'm having a killer practice session and I'm really, really happy with it, then I'll push. I'll keep pushing through it. If I'm making some major breakthroughs, then that's a time that I really want to keep going. I have a good idea of when things slack off and when I'm getting tired, both physically and mentally. And when that happens, I may make one little hard push for a couple more drills. But after that, it's best to step away and walk away and save it for another day. Interested in learning more about shooting sports? Check out Shoot, Your Guide to Shooting and Competition. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, Brownells, and other fine retailers. Thanks so much for everybody who wrote in with their questions. I actually have a few more to add to the next podcast, but please feel free to send them my way. You can reach me through Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, Pinterest, and, of course, through my website, the contact form there, or you can send me an email directly to julie@juliegolub.com. And I'm really looking forward to the month of April. Lots of exciting things going on. Of course, the NRA annual meeting. It's one of my favorite shows to go to. It's very exciting to be able to meet all of the wonderful NRA members that come by, and I'm really excited about attending the Women's Leadership Luncheon there. And I have my first USPSA match coming up, the Area 1 Championships in Utah. Really excited about that. I'll be shooting the Smith & Wesson 9mm Pro Series 1911. And hopefully we'll be getting ready for the Single Stack Nationals and the Bianca Cup in the following month. So I hope you have a great, great April. And until next time, be safe and have fun.